Chapter 18, Planning for More Evidence, Maria's Real Parents and Marriage. After the conversation on the phone, Steve said to Maria and his new parents, "What if the people I grew up with, parents or not, have similar DNA and that's what we're up against? We'll have to find some other proof. What if we set up a plan through the FBI to find someone that my parents might have known, and he or she should be a reformed crook, somebody from the mob who can contact him? The person must not be known as reformed, though. He can tell them in so many words that you two oldsters ran upon a lot of money somehow. A relative died and willed you to a fortune, and you're willing to give them $15 million in return for me. Have him or her say that you paid $1 million to a detective who works for the mob to find them through this crook. The reformed crook then will say to them that the detective made an agreement that we wouldn't reveal the crook's name at any time to anyone so he wouldn't betray himself or any of his mob contacts, including not revealing the identity of my parents to the oldsters or the detective himself. If my parents are kidnappers, they could most likely have some mob ties and probably somebody knows what they did. The crook could record the conversation when they make the deal and we'd have proof. Then we could bring the FBI in to get a recording during the deal for their evidence, and they are doubly caught. Should we do it by ourselves or strictly through the FBI? It sounds good, but rather difficult. I hope we can convince the FBI to do this instead of us," said Frank. "It could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars." They discussed lawyers and detectives. Frank and Bev mentioned some acquaintances who had handled kidnapping cases and might be able to do the job alongside the FBI, but they weren't sure whether their friends would be the best choice. Maria would contact Kathy to see if she had any contacts that could be trusted. Everyone agreed that Kathy might be the best person for the job. Weeks passed as they attempted to accumulate information about both Steve's and Maria's identity crises. Aside from working on Steve's case, they uncovered numerous contacts through Kathy's network of fellow detectives to find out about Maria's phony birth certificate. One of these detectives knew much about kidnapping. He also exposed a government cover-up of a kidnapping in Spain that had exposed the country's seedy side, particularly in Mallorca. Maria approached him with her problem, and he agreed to research it. His name was Richard Verne. When Richard had gathered some information, he met with Maria, Steve, Frank, and Bev. "I'm starting with a basic theory about your name and who disappeared with the name that is hard to read on the birth certificate. There were numerous children orphaned at the time of the takeover, but one was very interesting. There was an artist known for his surrealistic paintings. He was deemed a fraud by all the new members of the government. A con artist appointed by the government was then listed as the real artist. The whole story was covered up and declared top secret by the government at the time of your birth, which is why you never heard of it. His last name matched the name on your birth certificate. The painter whose identity was taken away was supposedly exiled, but many thought that he disappeared because of death threats. At the time of his disappearance, he'd had a child who had disappeared when she was about 2 years old. He claimed the mob took her. His wife had died mysteriously at this time, too. He was supposedly a revolutionary, and that was why he was run out of the country. His art was worth a fortune. He wasn't violent or openly radical, so they couldn't freely execute him. He was banished instead because he was of good standing, even though he was bohemian. The name where your name is on the birth certificate happens to be the name of his baby daughter, so we have a fairly good match. But as you remember, it's very hard to read, so we might have a problem submitting it as absolute evidence. Unfortunately, nobody knows where this artist is. His friends have never spoken up for him for fear of reprisals. They might do it for him now, however, and reveal his location. Most of his friends were bohemians and hippies and have since moved out of Colombia. The most important one lives in Goa, India, where many of the 60s generation still hang out. I'll go there and question them secretly if you wish." Meanwhile, the commune and the ashram were preparing to join Steve, Maria, and the Indian government to run the Manure Gas Power Company. They decided to meet at one of the meditation halls of Steve's guru and solidify their relationship. They discussed the guidelines they must follow to run the business, such as having monthly and yearly shifts where the members of the commune, ashram, and Steve and Maria develop and run the power company. They also assigned people to technical and monetary aspects of the business. Steve and Maria were chosen to remain head of the organization mainly because they were inspiring to the others and were the most actualized, practical, and creative individuals of the bunch. They spoke heatedly, and soon the conversation drifted to the more philosophical basis of the union as a power company rather than the practical side. One of the main communers revealed that he had left an upbringing of privilege and abundance to find the Godhead and start a new, non-capitalist, compassionate life. He stated that he thought this opportunity to help run this manure gas company was better than any he had ever had before. He felt it was a way for him to repay his debt to mankind for help he had received from a few kind and caring people, among the many he had known, most of whom had failed to teach him or show him ways to live compassionately. He believed that many people think frivolous indulgence is the main substance of life and replaces the need for inner meaning. He felt that gratitude for meager privileges in the world is not valued highly enough. We are all indebted to someone, if not for true guidance, then for circumstantial aid and food during our development. He thought of his parents who had given him very little direction in life beyond basic sustenance. He forgave his parents because purity of soul and personal guidance is difficult to attain and hard to show. Many regard such endeavors as invalid or insignificant. Some strive only for self-satisfaction, not compassion and spiritual purity that can be shared with peers. We extenuate purity in our world insofar as it proves itself practical, as many people deny that purity of spirit is something that can stand alone and is to be challenged and debated. I think we have truly developed an organization of people who have extenuated, in fact, purity of cause and indebtedness, said the man. We have proven we have the ultimately pure one within us. We know that through this pure, charitable work, we will be able to teach others how to repay their debt to the world through compassionate works. I think we also know that pleasure doesn't necessarily satisfy, but giving does. Hopefully we will be able to guide others through our commune, the guru's ashram, and Maria and Steve's music to have more complete personal direction, which will help guide and create a system not just to help people live a better life, but to live in oneness. Politicians, when they fight within themselves to understand compassion while simultaneously debating among their rivals, are stricken with public fear and political oppression to the point that morals and social principles are not discussed. Many politicos sidestep these values, assuming that the silent majority must know these things intuitively, which they don't. We, as the avant-garde, have conquered the fear of sharing amongst ourselves and are no longer mute. People in society, before they find a true cause, shouldn't feel guilty for not knowing what a true cause is. To publicly accuse people of this ignorance undermines and slanders the innocent. We all started out this simple. He paused for a moment before continuing. We also seem to be born with a certain amount of righteousness, which sometimes is taken from us, or even becomes self-righteousness. Hopefully we can develop cognitive understanding of our God-given spiritual and physical endowments and innate righteousness, even as we are being tested and contested of these things at all times. In many ways, even the best of people feel that they are constantly in physical and spiritual debt. The earth is a shabby hand-me-down. Life is on loan, and we are always striving to pay our debt for it. The pharaohs of Egypt usually ruled without discrimination, with personal privileges in mind, rather than rules, rights, and practicality. There are always some good kings and queens from all countries. We are all kings and queens in some way, but what we should really be are rulers over unruly desires and pleasures. This is true queen and kingliness. In verity, it seems that if you are a leader in the world and have a facade that communicates that you are wholehearted about something, this person ends up being the exact opposite, demanding and uncommitted, whether you're on the right or left. If you are simply logical and practical in your approach to leadership, and if you know where you stand, you do a lot better. Nobody compares the pathway of practicality to the more difficult but better partner, creativity. But how do you determine your own lot between these two in life? Isn't the essence of true, compassionate spirit ethereal, especially if you want to change something? Even if you don't do something provocative, you will be seduced by your rivals. If you eliminate all your challengers, you won't have any followers. It is true you can acknowledge your enemy with practical expediency, like that used when people compromise and accept your side, at least to a certain extent, through the search for more efficient and better prospects. Hopefully we will win all sorts of people to our side this way, even though true revolutionary change would be better. It seems we have more of an inalienable right to do good for others rather than the right to pursue happiness, which is what people who want to change everything sometimes want, like it states in the Constitution, only happiness regardless of mutual agreement. Compassion in this sense could be a replacement for happiness. Rather than forgiving our debtors, try to pay as much spiritual or physical debt as we can afford, not forgetting to care. This is an oath that our commune has essentially taken to itself before running this business. By doing something for the common people, we are absolving our debt to the people who put us here. I must reiterate, we are all a little in debt to God or to others in our life. Maria said, I was looking up some quotes with Steve. We were looking them up to adapt them for some songs we were trying to write about the foundation, or group, or business, or our realized dream that Steve and I are trying to create and run. One of the quotes we found isn't necessarily about capitalism as a foundation. We focused on one that states that the true foundation is love. Materialism, I suppose, can be love, but there is a difference between applied spiritual and narcissistic materialism, in practice and also in principle. Obviously, it is much easier to have no-nonsense principles in society when your materialism is effortlessly altruistic, and is thusly much more down-to-earth by putting care before desire. When society is given enough rational social meaning, and when it is logically charitable enough to give material success to people who have no spiritual or social success, society runs smoother. In the beginning of the world, we were thankful to have bodies alone. Then we strove to have health and thankfulness toward others, which developed into spirituality. Now we are learning to give everybody material and through that spiritual success. When most of us were young, there was a big issue about youth needing to be laid with proper foundations. This is the quote that I altered. We complained as teenagers about the underpinnings of basic reality, which the innocent hypothesized about, and it was held by many that our social foundations could be interpreted as if they were written in blood, not planted within Mother Earth. At the time we studied these quotes, Steve theorized that the belief that dreams are really primal ideas used to alter and correct delusional realities is a paradox. Dreams are normally considered as bent and misleading. Maria paused for a second as if she was going to cry. I have a dream realized. I have something related to those quotes we looked up that I want to announce. I am also creating a foundation for us communally and especially for my family. Steve doesn't even know, but I learned this morning that I'm pregnant. I mention this now because I associated it with the premise that we have now created amongst ourselves a foundation and dream of a New Age society that would be ideal for a child to live in. I wanted to mention it in connection to our success, this child being another sign of more dreams, larger foundations, and ultimate success. I also want to have a real marriage, I decided. If Steve agrees, I want to have a Hindu wedding at the meditation center here in San Francisco before the child is born. Wow, Steve exclaimed from the background. I'm so glad we're going to have a child. Hopefully he or she will consider our foundations loving and adequate and not just rebellious. And Maria, I think it would be fun to have a Hindu wedding. Solemnly, the guru said, perhaps your child will be the successor to pass on our teachings, if I may say so. That is very possible, stated Maria with dainty elocution. Since Steve approves of the Hindu wedding, and I imagine our guru approves, you are all invited. I'll send out letters. The reason why I chose a Hindu wedding is because I didn't want to feel as if we had succumbed to something out of tune with our subculture, even though I like regular marriages. I thought it wouldn't become just another pomposity that way. Maria added that she hoped to get married as soon as possible, but there were some things that Steve and Maria were trying to settle before they actually got married. She didn't state out loud that they were investigating the identity of their real families. The group discussed when they would meet again and who had which duties, then they parted ways.